everybody. It's Radio Free Nintendo, episode 455. I got the number right this time. I'm your host, James Jones. With me today, Mr. Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving to our American listeners.
Thank you, Greg. Also, Mr. Guillaume Bayette.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. How about yourself?
Pretty good.
I'm dramatically less sick this week.
Nice.
Not present right now, Mr. John Lindemann, who I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because we're recording on Wednesday and it was a slight change of plans, even though we've discussed it prior multiple times. He is allegedly going to be joining us in about 30 minutes. We shall see. This is going to be kind of a light episode. We're deep in planning for the telethon, which is going to be on December 5th, a Saturday. It's going to start at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's going to start with kind of a rundown of the show and a live now playing. Pray for us. We wanted to do an episode this week in part because we've got a lot of emails we want to get through, and also because we wanted to make sure that we got the opportunity to talk to you about the telethon and about what it means for us and what it means, you know, as part of contributing to helping children. If you're not familiar with the Child's Play charity, which we do the telethon for, I'll give you the really quick summary. Basically, they collect money to buy toys and games for children who are residing in children's hospitals around the world at this point. You know, it's a charity that means a lot to us, especially because it dovetails nicely with our interests. And, you know, I've never spent any dramatic amount of time in a hospital, but I cannot imagine how just soul-crushingly tedious that must be. So we're happy to do this every year, and it's a lot of fun. So, you know, we're really looking forward to it. Really hope you can make it. Again, it's Saturday, December 5th. We'll talk about it again at the end of the show. Donations are now open, as well as the full schedule is available. We had at least one incredibly gracious donor who bumped us up a lot today. We're already past $1,600 within about 24 hours, or maybe a little bit more than that. So, you know, our goal is $6,000. I definitely think we can blow through that. We've done it before. I think we'll do it again. So you can go ahead and contribute now, and we hope you'll be there on Saturday. But right now, for this episode, you know, with Thanksgiving holiday and all, we decided we were going to go through some email. We've got a lot of email to get through. So we're going to do some lightning round. Some Lords of Thunder round.
Can't believe it.
Maybe not the lordiest of thunder. Some of these might take a little bit more discussion than the normal Lords of Thunder. Maybe we'll call this the Gates of Thunder round, and we'll go from there.
Nice. Or you could go with, I think in Japan, Lords of Thunder is actually called Winds of Thunder.
Winds of Thunder. I like that, actually.
So we have to whisper our answers, or what?
Winds of Thunder. just real breathy. Winds of Thunder.
That doesn't sound annoying at all.
No.
And very easy to edit, I'm sure.
Yeah, yep. I'm sure it'd be. Yep. I'm sure the Audacity filters would love that.
Or we could just have the sound effect from Chrono Trigger's Nightmare Future just playing over the whole episode.
Ooh. But we're still hungry.
Yep.
Anyway, first email. Guillaume, why don't you read this one?
Sure. Soren writes, "Hello, RFN crew. How many divorces will Mitomo lead to within the first year of its availability? How long will it take before Nintendo pulls Mitomo from the App Store?" Wait, so these are several Thunder Round. Like, should we go one after the other?
Oh, I think what? We should definitely go one after another.
Okay, so how many divorces?
Larger than a bread box? I'm not sure. Like, I hope none, but maybe a couple? How, like, if one of the questions is, how do you feel about extramarital affairs? I strongly approve of them. That might be a problem.
Yeah, somehow I doubt that we're going to learn really important stuff about other people from Mitomo. But sometimes it can be surprising. In Wii Party U, there's one of the mini games has you on the gamepad, like setting a slider, like how smart do you think you are? And then other people will answer how smart do they think you are? But that also reflects, like, you know, how smart they think you are. So
just their direct opinion.
Apparently, yeah. So apparently I think I'm smarter than other people think. I think I'm smart. So I'm still with
less
Karen
modest than
this.
He appears, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. So apparently Wii Party U told you that you're a conceited asshole.
Yeah, basically. But still, you know, my couple survived. So
There you go. I want to hear about this game causing problems, but...
Next one. How long will it take before Nintendo pulls Miitomo from the App Store because it led to a Swapnose-esque situation?
God.
I would imagine never, because they've got to be so damn careful with this.
Oh my God.
I would have thought that's one of the things they're going to be extremely, extremely cautious about. But, I mean, you would have expected them to be cautious about Swap, though, and I'm sure they were in many respects. It still had to get nuked for the safety of kids.
You can still swap locally with friends. It's fine. I'm gonna put the over under at 2 years, and I'm gonna take the over.
Do we need to add the context? Like, Swapnote was taken down because in Japan there was an incident.
I thought the incident was more that there was kids on kids doing stuff, essentially.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, I don't know. I'm assuming we still don't know what Miitomo really is.
Don't.
So I kind of wonder.
I mean, this email obviously is in jest.
I assume one of the things it will be is painfully safe.
Probably.
That the info that you can share is incredibly limited.
Well,
I'm kind of expecting like 3 smileys.
That's right. Your choices are I agree or I also agree.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just going to be like everybody votes, you know. And it's just gonna, you know, which one you choose kind of maybe tells someone something about you, but it's open to dozens of interpretations.
Here's a hot take: everybody votes is a better polling system than Splatfests.
Yeah.
Next.
How many lines did Iguchi-san enjoy before he came up with the idea of trying to de-shy Japan?
His description, and none. I'm thinking that he got like a natural serotonin creation in his brain that's really high.
Given that Nintendo was in the business of making love testers in the past, I don't think that Iguchi-san
It's a Sisyphean task they've never grown tired of.
It's true.
Yeah, they keep trying. They tried to import Twister. You know, they licensed Twister. They tried to commercialize it in Japan, but people would not touch each other. I am not making this up.
It's just like, if you ever wonder, like, you know, the difference between, it's just like, what's the difference between, like, American or British or whatever kind of YouTube videos and Japanese YouTube videos?
Yes.
You will see many fewer faces, or possibly just covered faces at best. You know, whether it's cat videos, music covers, whatever, there's a huge commonality of the Japanese do are very shy. It's true.
It feels unfair to say, like, he's not even here to defend himself.
That's
last
why
question,
we should ask it right now.
What horrifying secret will we learn about John through Miitomo that we haven't through RFN?
I'm not
sure.
He's
very shy on this show, isn't he? I mean, he seldom speaks, and sometimes he just doesn't even turn up on time, so... You know, I mean, it's a similar sort of thing to de-shying Japan, but just on a micro level.
I'm not sure I want to de-shy John. I'm content with the level
of
shyness he has.
He's perfectly candid about, you know, Cho and Iki, but everything else is a mystery, which would normally be sort of the inverse of what you'd expect.
I mean, that's where he is right now. He is in his own personal Cho and Iki, so he's actually engaging in a muscle march right now.
I see.
One of his regular.
That's right. We're sort of impeding his normal Wednesday muscle march. So this is on us.
I can't top that.
that's that.
I guess we'll go to the next email.
Sure.
Yeah, it's thunderish round.
Thunderish, yeah. Dan writes, "Hey RFN crew, now with the awesomeificational edition of Karen. Your last chat about the NX system got me thinking. One of the annoying problems of Nintendo's newer home consoles, stationary, is that there has been a decreasing number of entries across particular genres as support from third-party dwindles. A particular genre would be the RPG. While the consoles have had good entries in that genre, Xenoblade comes to mind, they are few and far between. The prevalent idea, divined from Nintendo gold nuggets given during their investor meetings, is that the NX platform has some measure of shared functionality between the handheld and home console. This idea ranges all the way from compatible SDK to an NX platform itself being, quote, identical across devices, as if some multi-form factor platform. Considering the amount of RPGs released on the 3DS, some of them even good, Dan, that seems a lot unnecessarily negative. Might this be an opportunity for Nintendo to shore up this weakness for home console through the NX platform? Would love to hear your thoughts. Guess what, Dan? Gonna deliver. Here are our thoughts. Go.
I think that's a lot of the point of this thing. Is you know, to kind of put an end to some of these divides that have existed on, you know, the split between Nintendo's existing platforms, you know, where you get, because I think it's not just a question of the genres so much in itself, but it's a difference of the tastes in the markets. So, you know, Nintendo's different games you know, have different appeals in Japan or in America and all that, and this having the difference with the Japan being so portable dominated, whereas, you know, the home consoles seem quite popular elsewhere, that can really contribute to the genre divide. And I think Nintendo just wants to be able to, you know, get both markets go, get both platform, get both kind of user bases,
audiences,
picking from the same sort of lineup, really, rather than having to choose maybe one platform or the other based on what they like. And because it's like many things. I mean, you might say something like Monster Hunter, for instance, they've had some success bringing that over, but maybe, you know, in some ways it's something that Western players might be more apt to play on a console because it's not something they're going to do locally the way the Japanese might. Those sorts of divides could be bridged with NX, and I think that's a lot of what you're looking at. And so, yeah, you'd hope that basically the Japanese love of RPGs would mean that if the NX does sort of inherit the throne as the most popular portable console in that country, you're going to end up with a hell of a lot of RPGs that you'll be able to play on the big screen at home if you're in America or Europe or wherever else. So, I think that's a big part of the idea.
Guillaume, do you want to go next?
What is there to add, really? I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm perfectly content with playing the portable RPGs on my portable system. So, you know, to me, it's kind of not that it's useless, but
academic. Yeah, really,
yeah, kind of.
So, I mean, I look at it this way, that there, if you look at the state of the Japanese RPG market, because that's what I assume Brad's talking about here. But
yep.
Not Brad, sorry. Sorry, Dan, I'm reading ahead. It's my mistake. There is not necessarily a drop in quantity. What we've seen is a drop in the big giant games because they take longer to make now. I mean, the necessity to build art assets is significantly higher than it's ever been.
Hmm. And Final Fantasy 15, like, we're 2 years into this new generation of consoles. PlayStation 4 has been out for 2 years, right?
But yep. Final Fantasy 15 is a special case.
Yeah, well, it was in development for like the start of the PlayStation 3.
Yeah, that game is the new poster boy for development hell.
Right.
I would say that, you know, we're starting to see a handful of these come out now on Wii U. You know, we have Xenoblade Chronicles X. Japan is getting Gennaiben Rogu Sharp Refi, which I just like to say. I just like saying that game.
Sharp
rolls off the tongue.
Gennaiben Rogu Sharp. Yeah, you're right. Well, it did until you made me think about it. Thanks, Guillaume. But it just takes a long time to make these games in the console space. And what my concern is that the barrier to entry is so much lower on the 3DS that if they do share a platform, we've talked about this on the show, and this is why I'm kind of concerned about the idea of a single device future, that maybe like, you kind of have to play up to where your competitors are playing. You wouldn't be able to keep making 3DS graphical quality games on a platform if people are also putting out big budget, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles X quality games.
I don't know. It depends. I mean, because I think it will be targeted at the Japanese market first. And what that's going to mean, as, you know, just the data is very clear about this, is that, I think the primary focus will be the portable end of it. And so maybe the console sort of the home console, the TV kind of version of it could have some extra power or something. I mean, it's not as if it's a new thing for Nintendo, like having extra power go to waste. I mean, look at new 3DS. I mean, must
we look at new 3DS?
I mean, we've had Xenoblade 3D and we've had Binding of Isaac.
A bad port of Binding of Isaac.
That's it, you know, and meanwhile, the rest of that power, I mean, you've got the new stable 3D and stuff like that, and it makes the web browsing faster. So, but let's be fair, you know, it could be similar stuff to that. I think the point is that the focus is probably going to be on if there is a range of devices, it's going to be on that. The focus will be on the lower end because that is presumably where, you know, the Japanese gamers are going to be buying the kinds of games they want, because that's where the market is right now. PS4 is not that big over there. And as you say, I mean, a lot of the games that they like to play don't really fit with a PS4 type of market, do they?
Right.
You know, in terms of like how long it takes to develop and how expensive it is to develop to compete with the kinds of stuff that the Western, it's just a whole other thing. So I just don't really see that being the focus of the NX platform. It's still going to be, maybe it can, you know, the go higher and there'll be certain games that maybe are targeted more at our, you know, on our shores, that you know, tap into that power, but that won't really be the focus of the system, of the platform.
I will say, conversely, you know, I talked about how these big budget RPGs on consoles are struggling, and not struggling in terms of sales, just struggling to get made, struggling to be born. I was just, because of Seren, actually, friend of the show, I was going back through the Xenoblade Chronicles X Iwata Asks, and they talk about how they spent a year and a half just planning out the quests for that game, which is just dumb to think about. But there is a market coming out of Japan of these low-tier RPGs. Maybe they have a formula and they just crank out sequels. You know, we've joked about the Etrian Odyssey machine before, that there's some machine buried deep in the heart of Atlas HQ that just makes Etrian Odyssey games. Like, there's no human involvement whatsoever. They just happen. And these games sort of exist on, you know, both 3DS and Vita platforms. There's some upporting on the PS4, Vita PS4 compatibility versions. And they're usually, like, hyper-niche games. I do wonder, though, if you had a combined platform, it'd be sort of like the PS4 situation, where the Vita game has a PS4 version. I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, Hyper Dimension Noir 3 Hyper Lunacy Edition is going to sell a lot of people, but, you know, that those games have a fairly low cost of entry and a fairly devoted fan base. So that's sort of, it's, you know, it's not just necessarily because the third party support has gone away. It's partially just a function of where that market is right now.
And just with the direction the industry's gone, and, you know, the variables involved in these things.
I mean, the biggest JRPG coming out this year in North America, besides Xenoblade X, coming out in the back half of this year, and I'm sure I'm missing one on the console space, might be the PS3 game Yakuza 5. Which, despite all pretense, is actually kind of a JRPG. But,
and is Yakuza 5 even localized, or did they again keep the
oh, they
the
just
Japanese
they just
track?
Yeah, they just threw subtitles on that and called it a day.
Right.
Yeah. But you wouldn't want to localize that game; you'd ruin it.
Right. Yeah. Like, if they started talking like mobsters, like,
or if they had Mark Hamill, which. He actually was the main antagonist of that series for like the PS2 entries. Next email, Greg.
Brad writes, "Hi guys. Two things. One, I actually really like Codename Steam. I love the art style and the satisfaction of an alien headshot. I would recommend folks give it a second chance. Number two, I've played games on lesser difficulty settings the last 2 years and find I'm enjoying myself a great deal more because I tend to finish things now. Fire Emblem Awakening, Persona 4 Golden, Bravely Default, etc. At first I felt sheepish about this choice, but increasingly I feel the shift has rekindled my love of games. In general, do you have a stance on difficulty settings? Do things like age, free time, children, etc. play into your view? P.S. I'm annoyed by people saying they play classic Fire Emblem only to learn they reset battles when they lose a map or a key character. That's casual 2.0. I'm sort of kidding here.
I actually did play Fire Emblem Awakening on casual, not because I can't play that game on classic. I've played multiple Fire Emblem games on classic, and I did do the reset thing, because you have to, because there's a limited number of characters. And if you don't, you will not have enough characters to form an active party. It's right. kind of a necessity. I did it for exactly this reason, though. Like I knew I could beat that game on Classic. I knew I could pull it off. It's just, dude, I want to replay these missions two or three times because the game does something really nefarious, like has the long-range ballista hidden somewhere really, you can't see.
I really can't deal with strategy RPGs. There's something. I know exactly what's wrong with them, and it's the random number generator. I just can't deal with the fact that sometimes I know I should like fell the boss when I hit him, and then like whoops, no, I missed. You know, I had 95% chance and I missed. Like I'm right next to him, I swing my sword and like whoops, oh, I like 3 meters away, you know. So like the whole difficulty settings in that case, when most of the time it seems to impact how often you actually hit the target, how many times you're actually you get hit, I'm perfectly fine with lowering difficulty settings. Like all the examples that he gives are strategy RPGs or RPGs. And in that case, all you're doing is cutting down on annoying grinding, right? So why wouldn't you be for a lower difficulty setting?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, personally, I have a very kind of liberal attitude on this. It's just play whatever you feel like. I don't right. see why you should kind of railroad yourself into something that's either going to waste your time or just lead to you missing out on the fun you could have had playing the game if you abandon it early. It sounds like kind of Brad might have done that in the past if you got to hit a wall with it. I mean, I think the one thing I would say is with higher difficulty sometimes is they can kind of reveal something about the game design, you know, that it's things being important that, you know, perhaps wouldn't have necessarily otherwise seen, you know, maybe in an RPG it might be the finer points of a job system and, you know, kind of combining skills and really being kind of assiduous about that sort of stuff rather than just sailing through it because right. it's the damage mm-hmm. health is tilted. So I think there's something to be said for, you know, playing on a higher difficulty sometimes if it's your cup of tea, but it depends what game we're talking about as well, yeah. you know, and it, sometimes difficulties are not simply, you know, that sometimes they actually, I always reference the Sin and Punishment on N64 actually has more bosses, more content, you know, it's you know, substantively different on a higher difficulty, but that's pretty rare, isn't it?
Yeah.
Typically,
but even when it doesn't unlock more content, sometimes it just feels better to play on normal or hard. I just remember Beautiful Joe on easy. It was kind of it was not particularly fun to play, like
it was just beat 'em up, basically.
Yeah, you were just like mashing a button and killing enemies and going through the motions. But on normal mode, it took a while to wrap your head around it, or at least it took me a while to understand the battle system. But once it clicked, oh, okay, I'm supposed to punch these guys in slow motion, send them flying into other enemies, and it just multiplies the Vs that you get, the points. So yeah, like there's definitely something to be said in action games.
Sort of the Clover Platinum kind of right. way of doing things. They're almost kind of a new game plus type of thing as well, because right. you might have like bought all the skills and they've got the better weapons and all that. And now when you play the hard of difficulty from the start, you know, you'd kind of playing it very differently from what you would have done at the start. Obviously, a big part of it is, you know, the enemies being more damaging and you've got less health or whatever. But it's you know, it's also quite a different experience because you bring in all those sort of toys to the party from the very beginning. And it's nice to see, you know, what you can achieve with that. But yeah, I'd go back to Codename Steam, actually. I'm rather a fan of Codename Steam as well. And I've been playing through the missions recently on the one where you can't turn back, you know, when basically you kind of, your steam is expended as soon as you've
right.
taken that step rather than the kind of until you've committed to a particular action as it is in the normal difficulty. And no, I certainly like it. And I would say, to Guillaume's point about strategy RPGs, you know, it's got some of that kind of probabilistic element into it, you know, with the alien headshot thing, in terms of, you know, you actually have to make that shot, You know, it's not just guaranteed. You don't pick it from a menu. You know, the enemy is in a little animation cycle, and there might be a particular timing where you can hit it on that weak spot. But at the same time, you know that it's your action that plays into that. It isn't just a random number generator.
Right.
And that's one of the things I really liked about Codename Steve. The feeling of making one of those shots, like on one of them berserker nasty things, when you know if you don't kill it in this turn, it is going to kill one of your characters that might be, you know, out there on his own working towards the goal or something. Great tension and great satisfaction when you pull it off.
Yeah, I mean... God, I'm really sorry about this. I'm really sorry about this.
You promised us you were less sick, James.
I am actually less sick. I was doing a better job of muting my microphone last week. So, a lot of that shows up in like Valkyria Chronicles, but there is an RNG on top of that. So that complicates things slightly. But it tells you explicitly what your percentage is of hitting the shot. Which I'm okay with, because it tells you, oh, if you see you look like you're lined up, but you only have like a 7% chance of making the shot, then you probably say, I should redeploy and come up with a different plan.
Yeah, no, and right. Fire Emblem's got a lot of that, though. Those percentages visible.
Yeah, it gives you both the amount of damage you're going to do and the percentage of likelihood you're going to actually land.
And that plays into the weapon triangle and all that. You know, that dictates what the probabilities are. I mean, in terms of Fire Emblem, I kind of made my feelings on this clear when we did the Sacred Stones retroactive years ago, in terms of if I felt like a character died for a good cause, I would be willing to let them stay dead. But if it was just like idiocy on my part or some other sort of BS, I'd probably reset the mission.
I would say one game that I actually did find setting the difficulty down was worth it was something like the aforementioned Yakuza games, because it was just grinding through the stuff was kind of brutal a little bit. And then eventually I felt like, okay, I can go up. And I just did, and I just went from there. Like, there are times where having the ability to go down isn't just cheating. It's just like, I can't be effed to deal with this. There's very few games out there that I think any of us on the show just couldn't head down, push through. It's just a matter of, is it worth the time and effort?
Yeah, and of course, as it's talked about in the question, the fact is those things do change for people over time a lot in a lot of cases. And so, you know, maybe, you know, you might feel a bit kind of wimpish, you know, but if it makes sense, it makes sense. I mean, I just don't really, you know, I mean, it's on the one hand, it might be more satisfying to beat something on a higher difficulty after you've put more time into it. But if that's time that ultimately then you're not going to be able to put into seeing the rest of the game or other games, or it's pretty hard to justify it at that point.
Absolutely. So, Guillaume, next email.
Adrian writes, I heard some buzz a few months ago about a piece of kit called a Retron 5. It's one of these 5 consoles in one deals that plays a lot of the old consoles. There are plenty of these out there on the market, but the strange thing with a Retron 5 is that even though it takes cartridges, it plays the games via emulation rather than via hardware. I've read opinions online from people saying it's a pointless device for that reason. Would any of you be interested in a piece of kit like this? Does the fact that it emulates games rather than play them natively put you off?
So go ahead.
You got a Retron 5?
No.
No?
No. I thought about it.
The Retron 5 is not really for me because I generally don't hoard games, and I'm not a collector either. So the fact that it can play the cartridges, that's not a selling point for me.
It does seem like it's the intersection you're looking for in terms of someone's circumstances that makes it ideal. Somebody who has hoarded games, but then might have kind of a limited capacity to have a whole bunch of different systems hooked up to their entertainment center or whatever. So you just have this one device hooked up to it, and then you can whip out any of those collections that you've built up over the years and play them on a nice big TV or whatever, you know, that way. That seems to be, you know, the circumstances it would take. For me, I don't have vast collections of past systems. So I do, you know, I do have, you know, a fair number of games, but at, I've got quite a few of the original systems still hooked up to the TV, just hogging all my inputs, you know, some using SCART, some using,
God,
a component, and then you've obviously got HDMIs and all that. So yeah, for that reason, it doesn't really tempt me a great deal, because it's right. Just, well, you know, I've got quite a few of these original hardwares, and they obviously don't have any of the issues that might come up with emulation. So yeah,
right.
It's not something I'm really all that interested in.
So the Retron 5, for those who are totally unacquainted with the device. It plays Famicom, Super Famicom, and then the NES, Super NES. It plays Genesis, Mega Drive, Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance.
Right. And because it uses emulation, you can patch the ROMs, right? You can,
right.
Like if you've got a Japanese cart and you've got the translation patch, you can play that off your Retron 5.
And it'll also let you auto-apply, like, codes from like Game Genie and stuff, where you can just download big buckets of just codes for devices like that, Game Shark, Game Genie, and just apply them automatically onto the ROM.
So it's pretty standard emulator stuff. The thing is, I do have a friend who has a Retron 5, and he does import cartridges, buy old cartridges. Like, owning the cartridges is important to him. He owns a Retron 5, but I think that the Retron 5 has problems with, like, it can bend the tins and the cartridges. Like, it's got, like, yeah, it's not a very good piece of hardware. It can break, can damage your cartridges, so that's no good. And the guy also has a Raspberry Pi, where he's got, like, he's downloaded all the emulators that he needs, and so he's got the ROMs on there, and he bought, like, one of those USB SNES-looking controllers. And so instead of lugging around cartridges in a Retron 5, you know, like, he brought that over, and we played, you know, his games on the Raspberry Pi. So I can't see a good case. Like, first, like, the fact that it breaks your stuff probably, you know,
it's not going to always break your stuff.
Would you take that risk, though?
Right. Well, yeah. And ultimately, that's not what turned me off to the Retron 5.
Okay.
So they Hyperkin, who makes this, produces all sorts of stuff. Like, they produce replacement joysticks for the N64 controllers, all the way up to, like, USB dongles to use GameCube controllers if you're one of... I can't have the Smash conversation anymore because I'm the host of the show.
Mm-hmm.
If you're one of those people. They had previously produced, as the name might imply, not four Retron models. Retron 4 never came out, but they produced a Retron 1, 3, and 5. Maybe they're just, like, prime numbers, but don't like 2. The Retron 3 only did the NES, SNES, and Genesis. The thing that gives the Retron 5 an advantage over these other sorts of retro, you know, these retro remake consoles, these rebundles, is that it can natively output HDMI. Which means if you put it out to your TV, it does look good. The reason it can do that, though, is because it is emulated. It's going digital to digital. So what it does is essentially it does a ROM dump of the cartridge onto this Android device that actually is the brain of the Retron. Mm-hmm. And then just runs it through what ultimately is not the highest quality emulator, which is part of the reason I didn't buy the Retron 5. It's also a fairly expensive piece of kit, and there's some issues about maybe it used, you know, unlicensed or libraries that were free, but you weren't allowed to use them in retail products, and it did some shady stuff there. But ultimately, it's just not a great experience of a device, which is a bummer because I own roughly. I haven't cataloged the stuff in my parents' house, but I would guess I own roughly 700 video games, just as a rough guess. About 300 of those are GameCube or newer. So, you know, there's a significant number of them wouldn't be usable on the Retron anyway. I didn't have all these games as a kid. I inherited a bunch of Super Nintendo games for people who stopped playing video games. You know, I went to yard sales as a kid and just bought big lots of games because their son went to college and she's going to sell all his video games for a dollar. I'm not really a collector. I just, you know, I got them just so I could graze, essentially. It was cheaper than going to Blockbuster and renting a game. So I have these games, and the ability to play them on a modern TV without having to deal with, you know, digital or analog to digital stuff and dealing with all the garbage that comes with that is appealing. And actually playing them on the original cartridges, on original controllers, is nice because this thing does take original controllers. The Retron also has its own wireless controllers that are abysmal.
I remember reading about that being pretty useless.
I used one of these at an industry event. I can't remember which one, and I was blown away by how bad it was. But like, if there was a retro console that I could play these games on, and keep in mind, I can still go to, like, you know, yard sales and stuff and pick up, you know, 12 Genesis games for $10, and maybe. Well, the Genesis, all 12 of them are going to be terrible. But maybe one of them is not otherworldly terrible. Then maybe I came out ahead. It's just something I could play for a little bit. If the Virtual Console was a more lively product, if the games that should be on the Virtual Console were there and we were in the territory of getting like crazy crap that you're just like, why are we getting the fourth Golden Axe? Well, this is what we got right now. Play Golden Axe 4. Have a good time. Then... And the prices were more commensurate with just finding these games secondhand, then yeah, I would have no need for a Retron device. But the reality of the situation is the games aren't there, the prices aren't commensurate, and there is something about having this big catalog of games that's not necessarily super appealing to me, but there is something about like just grabbing a game and it's got like the Mattel logo on it, and it looks like there's a fighter plane, but it also might be made out of knockoff Legos, and you're like, I don't know. What's this? And then you play it, and you either to find out it's just the biggest piece of garbage ever, or it's kind of an amusing distraction for 10 minutes where you toss it in the bin. But right now, I don't have a console to play these on, so I don't buy them. So the Retron potentially filled a need, but ultimately it's an inferior product, so I did not go there.
And yeah, like I just go with what's on the Virtual Console. If I were more of a collector, or if I were more into... kind of downloading ROMs and playing them, I think I would go with the Raspberry Pi route. You can get these, like this kind of shell called the RetroPie. You install that on your Raspberry Pi, and like that thing has an HDMI output and USB. You plug that on your TV, and this RetroPie shell is just gorgeous. It's this beautiful way to present these emulators. You bring up the Super Nintendo emulator, and you know, you've got this blurred picture of Link to the Past in the background, and it's way better presented than anything Nintendo has ever done with our Virtual Console. It does take some know-how to play with that stuff. Like personally, I've never really used Linux, but you can follow how-tos on the internet, and it can't be that complicated. Anyway, go pirate stuff is what I'm saying.
Terrible.
Go pirate everything.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you can't play official games on the Raspberry Pi. And there is something about having the cartridge.
No, but I mean, you can buy the cartridges and then download the ROM.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. But like, there's something about that whole seeding the cartridge in that is, there is a nostalgia to that.
Yeah, I think that, again, yeah, sure. Those are the kinds of people that would, you know, get something out of this kind of thing. But, I mean, I recognize what Adrian said in terms of, you know, there's this, it doesn't make the most sense. If you're into that whole thing of the cartridge and all that, then, you know, do you want to be playing emulation? You know, they're probably, it's just this weird little kind of Venn diagram sliver that this is suitable for.
Then you're looking at paying so much for what you're getting, though. Like, I mean, if you want something that plays off the hardware, then you kind of have to get original hardware, right? Then you'll probably want the upright NES or Famicom if you import, you know, let's say you want to play
like
Battle of Olympus.
You got the super premium options, like was that Analog NT, you know, the sort of NES clone hardware that goes outputs HDMI and stuff like that. You know, so yeah, that's like, I mean, James is all about the cost of the Retron, but that's like, yeah, I think considerably more expensive again.
Well, yeah. And like there are products out there. I mean, there are products out there like the Retro Bit, which I think actually does use refactored hardware. So it's not an emulator. Like the Retron 3 was not an emulator. It was running on hardware. It was a hardware clone. But it's just that you're always gonna, if you're running on hardware, you're always going to be doing the analog to digital, unless you're dealing with some kind of computer in the middle, essentially. And granted, video game consoles are computers. I get that, but there is a difference, and you know, it is what it is. As far as I know, there is no retro console besides the 5 that does plug that takes actual cartridges but outputs to HDMI. And I looked, because at one point I was planning on just getting one, and that was the only one that made me sad.
Oh.
But I mean, you don't need a top loading NES. I've got my old one from 88, I guess. Still works just fine. Just clean your contacts before you put the games in. That's the trick. Don't try to clean the contacts on the system. Clean the contacts on the game before you plug it into the system.
There we go.
A little rubbing alcohol on a Q-tip will go a long way.
That goes for so many things.
Speaking of hydrogen peroxide and a Q-tip, Sean Lindemann is here.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, it's gotta be clean, people. Just remember that.
That's what we were speaking. We were talking about cleaning your cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta clean your cartridge before you plug it in.
Of course you mean that literally.
Yes.
Yes, I mean that literally.
On this podcast, there's a high chance that, yes, we're talking literally. Okay. It's not a metaphor.
Yeah.
Just setting the groundwork here.
Actually, John, because this is something, we'd gotten a question about the Retron 5, and mm-hmm. we've talked a lot about it already. Have you ever considered buying one of these retro remake consoles?
No, I mean, I always question their build quality, and I don't know. I just always find that the best experience is had on the original consoles for all the ones that I would want.
But then did you end up selling your NES?
I still have my NES. I don't have it with me here, but I still do have it. Right now I have the only one of my retro consoles that I sold was my TurboGrafx-16.
Oh,
I sold that guy. Yeah. I never had any of the goofy peripherals with that one. Like, I never had the CD-ROM or anything like that. So
you mean like the controller?
The controller was pretty terrible for the TurboGrafx-16.
I almost bought one recently. So,
The retro consoles that I have now, I still have my NES. I still have my Super NES. I got rid of my N64. But I think somewhere along the way, somebody I know found an N64 and gave it to me. Like, they found it in their garage. So I do have one kicking around. I don't even know if it works. I think at the same time, I also got a Genesis with a bunch of, like, of course, Mortal Kombat was in the cartridge. It was one of those things where, like, hey, I found all these. You're a video game guy. Get them out of my garage.
Take them away.
So, yeah, just take them away. And I'm like, okay, like an idiot. So, yeah, so I still have one of those, and I still have my GameCube. Got rid of my Wii. I just sold that, and that's where I'm at now. But yeah, these the Retron stuff. I always hear kind of mixed reviews. Like, I've never looked at reviews of any of these things and seen them, you know, be like, oh, this thing is so amazing. You can get rid of all of your old consoles. It's always just like, yeah, you know, this kind of thing is sort of weird. You know, this kind of sucks. This game doesn't run correctly. You know, they all seem to get mixed reviews.
Yeah, the only one that I'm keeping an eye on right now is the Retro Freak, which does actually support TG16, which I think is the first one of those that does it.
Yeah, I haven't seen many TG16 ones at all. I can't think of one.
That's the only one that I know of, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of forgotten.
Yeah.
Kind of forgotten console.
Cool. So we're going to move on to the next email.
Kenny writes, I've recently begun building a library of the best and most interesting games for Nintendo DS to play on my 3DS, having missed out on the old predecessor. I'm not interested in games that have superior releases on 3DS or the Wii family, like Mario Kart and New Super Mario Bros. Bah, bah.
Bah,
apparently a sheep.
Yeah, that's more like it.
Bah, bah. Either way, it comes out like an angry sheep.
The,
the spirit of the season, you know, the humbug.
Yeah. But something like Mario and Luigi counts if you think one of the DS games is the best in the series. I've currently got the Pokemon and Zelda games, 999, The World Ends With You, and Ghost Trick. Any genre will do. What are the must-haves I'm missing out on? I'd love one recommendation from each of you, and I will do my best to obtain them.
I'll go last because I've got a list. So
aside from A Link Between Worlds, I mean,
that's the wrong system, John.
Right.
I think everybody's just DS games. He's been on the show less than 2 minutes and he's already ruined it.
Kenny wants specifically DS games.
Yeah, okay.
I would say don't miss out on Space Invaders Extreme 2.
Yeah, that's a good
one. A really good game. I really wish that, who is it, Taito, so Square Enix?
Yeah.
Well, so I really wish that they had released an eShop version for 3DS, but they never did. So
there was a DSiWare version in Japan.
Yep.
I think it was Space Invaders Extreme Z or something.
Right, never came out here. Yeah, so yeah, there's no way to have it constantly on your 3DS, which is a travesty.
The high school game like that is always better digital. Yeah.
But hunt down a cart and play that. It's a fantastic update of Space Invaders. It's a great high score game. There's even download play if you want to play co-op or versus, if that's something you're into. Although I tried playing that once and the game slowed to a crawl, just could not handle it. So
yeah, there's a lot of stuff on screen, I guess.
it's a very flashy game, but it's a ton of fun.
I would say, actually, it's prompted by Kenny, Bowser's Inside Story is a decent option for Mario and Luigi, because certainly I wouldn't put Dream Team above it. That's on 3DS. You know, I think Bowser's Inside Story is better paced in particular. Also, just still looks really nice, arguably nicer than the 3DS version. Although, I mean, the sprite work in Dream Team is good, but I just like the aesthetic more in Bowser's Inside Story. And the more Bowser, he's funnier. You get Fawful. It's definitely one of the best in the series, and one of the best games on the system in my view. So yeah, I can't go too far wrong with that. Of course, we do have the issue of Paper Jam about to come out, but I would
right.
be surprised.
It's an unknown quant.
It's a little bit.
Paper Jam Brother, singular.
It's a little bit unclear, you know, whether that would supersede this recommendation, but if I were a betting man, I'd probably say no. Just because it's such a high bar to reach. I think they really kind of hit a sweet spot with Bowser's Inside Story, and when you try and sort of add things to it or all that, in the end, I'm not sure, it really is to the game's benefit.
John?
Similar sort of thing. I would say as well is that I assume Picross 3D 2 is coming eventually, so it's unnecessary.
Oh, God, I hope so.
It's some sort of, nightmare parallel world where it doesn't then get Picross 3D, because it's great.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, what I enjoyed, I enjoyed Sonic Rush. That was actually a really competent Sonic game.
I'm legitimately surprised.
That's a really good game.
Sonic Rush. I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I was
I'm
just
not,
surprised.
I'm no
that was
Sonic
go-to.
Expert, but to compare it with all the other games in the series, but it was definitely good. There was another one as well, it was the Sonic Rush Adventure, which I didn't play. I'm not sure how much better or not that is than the original, but I mean, maybe it's cheaper or something. It's another option.
So my go-tos would normally be the Ace Attorney games, although there's a collection on 3DS. You may as well just buy those. You don't need
right.
four. No one
currently
needs
on sale for Black Friday slash Thanksgiving.
It's that's a hell of a deal, because that's a lot of game. And nobody needs four. Ace Attorney 4 never happened. Don't worry about it. Or the Layton games, but I struggle to pick one. The Last Time Travel / Unwound Future is probably the best on DS.
Yeah, I'd go along with that.
But the end sort of loses any and all meaning if you haven't played any of the other ones, so it's kind of a wash there. Elite Beat Agents was kind of where I was leaning, because that game's so... Or the Owen Don.
They'd probably be harder to find, maybe, but any of those are a lot of fun.
Those are up there, but the one that I'm going to go with, and I especially I'm haranguing on this, is actually Radiant Historia.
As I knew you would go to that.
because that game is amazing. That game.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I pick Sonic Rush, is because there's a bunch that are kind of just obvious go-tos, and I think that's kind of one of them.
Yeah, like, so for me, the two game. Well, John, you know I was going to go for that because I think you were my reviews editor when I got it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, your love affair with that game is long known on this
show. Yeah, like, that was one of two games where I basically sent you an email going, John, what's a 10?
Yeah.
Because I wasn't sure.
And I'm like, game, well, I think, let me look at my Spiderwick Chronicles review.
That game missed, but like the other game that he mentioned, Ghost Trick, was right there at some point, and I just said it's not quite. But like those two games are really on my pantheon of DS, just outstanding DS titles. I mean, I own dozens and dozens of DS games, and whenever the DS comes up, there's the two that jump to the front of my list. It's you know, it's weirdly not a Nintendo game. It almost never is a Nintendo game.
Well, especially DS, though. You've got so many non-Nintendo stuff to choose from. That's the thing.
There's actually an article that we did as a site on Nintendo World Report, the 30 best DS games. And I think we also did an episode where we sort of covered this ground on the retrospective of the DS library. If you get through these and you're still hankering, there's some... DS is at a place now, I say this as... You know, as I said, I'm not a collector, and then now I'm going to dispense collecting advice. DS is at a place where the prices have started to climb on it fairly precipitously, especially anything first party. The Star Fox Command, for example, is prohibitively expensive given the fact it's on Wii U right now. I don't
know. Given the fact that I paid about $7 for it a few months after it came out.
I know, I don't understand. I would imagine if you were to try to buy... Spirit Tracks right now, you would pay significantly more than if you tried to buy it 3 months after it came out. It's just a weird...
That crashed hard in Japan. I don't know about other places.
It's just a weird quirk of that platform, and it's reaching nostalgia zone at this point.
So, once you get to like 10 years, I guess that's where you get.
So, you know, you can still get some really good deals for some really outstanding games, and I think all the ones listed here are really, really good. And most of the ones in that feature are really, really good.
Kirby Canvas Curse is... I mean, I know you've got the Wii U game, which I do like, but Kirby Canvas Curse is not a bad show, I think.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's not bad either. Meteos is also good. That was one
Meteos
of
is
like,
really
that
was, good.
Yeah, that was Meteor, one of, that's yeah. a great choice, John. Yeah. Castlevania. There's some great Castlevania games there, but you could argue you're better off getting Aria of Sorrow. You know, like, this is kind of rather. He's talking about like games on 3DS that are like the, you know, successors, but also you kind of got the antecedent thing as well, where sometimes they're better, and they might be on Wii U Virtual Console, for instance, or you might be able to get the cartridges cheap. Although GBA cartridges is fraught with fakes if you're trying to buy them. But yeah, there's a lot of great. Like another one would be like, I do like Advance Wars: Days of Ruin a lot. But maybe a lot of people would say you're just better off going with Advance Wars GBA.
Yeah.
I guess that's debatable.
Yeah, it's debatable. But DS library is a crazy, ridiculous thing. I mean, I think I might own 40-plus games on that platform, and I'm still buying some.
Yeah.
It's just because you can. Definitely look into the highlights, though. Like
Metroid Prime Pinball is also really good.
Yep, I love that one.
I was worried where Wappy Dog's amazing.
Miami Knights, Singles in the City, also.
Yeah, who could forget?
Cotton Recruit, it's full head gold.
I was reliably informed by someone that the faces in Miami Knights look like as if they'd been little action figures melted with a magnifying glass. I wonder who said that.
That might be my favorite line I've ever put in a review.
Yeah.
But anyway. Next email. Dan from Canada writes, not to be confused with just Dan. This is Canadian Dan. My question pertains to the Virtual Console. In the entire history of the service, what game surprises you the most that it is available? I.e. it had to overcome a major hurdle with regards to licensing, or is very obscure, or Nintendo had to overcome a technical issue. And what game surprises you the most that it's not on there? I.e. it doesn't appear to have any of the licensing issues or technical issues. As always, love the show.
Yeah, we've got some good. I'd say my arcane knowledge of the Japanese Wii Virtual Console yields a good one. You may be familiar with the god awful Transformers game that was on the Famicom.
The infamously bad Transformers
is, yeah, it is really, really terrible. Mystery of Convoy or whatever, I think is the subtitle translated. That, you know, is infamously bad and it's got a license and all that. That's on the Japanese virtual console, or at least it was. I know it's been delisted subsequently because some licensed stuff did.
Right.
You know, like the deal ran out or whatever, like Turtles on NES and stuff. But how on earth that got on there when there is a license issue, and it is so infamously awful, just god awful.
Oh yeah, it's unbelievably bad.
Yeah, just risible on kind of every level. I'm impressed with that, but I guess it's a Japanese example, so maybe that, you know, they had many, many more games than we ever did. So I guess it's slightly different standard.
Yeah, I don't think that it had any technical stuff to overcome, but it certainly had a hurdle in terms of not a whole lot of people cared about it. But Demon's Crest, I'm surprised still that came to Wii U Virtual Console.
It's a weird one because you know, if you'd asked me going back with the Wii Virtual, I would have thought, well, why not? But then when it didn't come out on Wii, it's like, well,
yeah,
why
that was done. Yeah,
why would it
over.
Come out now? And yet, you know, we got like all of that kind of Capcom stuff, that just the stuff that for whatever reason hadn't come out, you know, Mega Man 7 and all that. All
yeah, I don't know
out.
If there was like a change of people at Capcom, or if someone lobbied for these games really, really hard and finally got their say. But yeah, like the Trombone game and Mega Man Legend, and all that stuff that people have been asking for a long time on PlayStation Network and on Virtual Console, it's finally coming out now. It seems like it's a little bit late, especially since, you know, like these PlayStation 1 classics are not playable on PlayStation 4, and, you know, the Wii U is is not even close to as successful as the Wii was.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unfortunate, but at the same time, I'm really happy that these titles finally, like,
and
something
of course,
unblocked somewhere.
Another famous example in that area is Earthbound, isn't it? Because again, it was
right.
Like, well, I mean, there was a bunch of theories about why it took as long to come out as it did, but you always kind of felt like, well, if they haven't released it by now, then you know, maybe it's never going to happen. And then along it comes, and then you get Earthbound Beginnings this year as well, just for the kicker, even though they never actually released that game before. It was, you know, entirely finished, so I guess it was always possible from that point of view. I got to get it in there. I know it's just an easy one, but Chouaniki.
Yeah, I was waiting for my opportunity to speak.
I mean, that's one of those ones on the Japan Virtual Console, which has like way, way, way more scrolling shooters in general and plenty more obscure and weird ones. Fine. But the fact that that was an import game, you know, we're one of the relatively early ones, like way before Dracula X, or, you know, something that people actually won, you know, like, I can't believe that
my only answer is that that series is kind of infamous because of the internet. And that was why I ended up.
Yeah, I guess there's that. Meme-erific.
I would say on that same token, in that same genre, the Biomerica Bokute Upa.
Yeah, the Konami, the Konami baby game.
Yeah, the Konami.
I'm not being disparaging.
It is literally a baby game.
A baby protagonist game.
You are a baby who flies through stuff. I don't. It's weird. It's a weird game. I mean. My obvious go-to for surprise that's there would be Ogre Battle 64, because I actually on this show said repeatedly, like, there's no chance in hell.
Again, that did have some obstacles to overcome, didn't it?
It was
originally an Enix game, but then Atlas published it in America, and obviously that's the version that we got as well.
But
it never
Nintendo
came out
funded
here.
Its creation.
Yeah, it's a lot of weirdness that went into that. And of course, there just weren't many N64 games, full stop. I mean, there's a lot more kind of obvious stuff that you might have thought could have been on there before Ogre Battle ever would have got there.
I would say that actually, the one I would go with is the Super Nintendo March of the Black Queen. And I say that because that game never released outside of Japan or America. Not North America. America. And had 25,000 units made for the North American region.
Man.
Like, think about that. Think about how freaking obscure a game that is. The vast majority of people who played it in English almost certainly pirated it.
Yep.
Which is crazy. That game came out, because that one had less of an issue, because the thing with Ogre Battle 64 is Enix published it, Quest made it. Quest got bought by Square Enix sometime after the fact. Nintendo funded it, and then those companies merged. And ultimately, I think the fact they merged is what made that game possible. Because otherwise, you would have had three license holders instead of just two. But in this case, you only had the one. But you also had the overwhelmingly stifling obscurity of the game. So I guess the other... Or John, do you have one?
For me, it was really not one in particular necessarily, but really I was just surprised that all the Commodore 64 ones came out, just because it's like, why?
That's just true.
It just seems so strange. And
I mean, I would argue, why did the Commodore 64 come out?
They spoke it like a true American, man.
Yeah, exactly. No, Commodore 64 is amazing, man. So I take I take issue with you there, James. You're showing your ignorance, but
I always enjoyed playing those arcade ports on the C64. Oh wait, they were terrible.
Oh, you hush your mouth. But yeah, I mean,
how's your human killing machine port, John?
I could certainly say, you know, in terms of if you're trying to tap, I think it's in Europe, if you're trying to tap into like nostalgia, you know, like lapsed gamers or stuff, like there was a lot of people that didn't grow up with NES the way I did. They grew up with Commodore 64. So it kind of made sense from that point of view.
Yeah.
And I think we did get more of them than the North America market did. But, the North America market got them too. I guess it's kind of like the analog to, you know, Japan having MSX games, but Japan's virtual console was just so much more vibrant in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everything came out. I mean, really, we sort of missed the elephant in the room, which was Sin and Punishment.
Yeah, again, that's kind of an Earthbound Beginnings thing, isn't it? In terms of it was ready to be done. I mean, I don't think it's like one of the most surprising in all things considered, but it was surprising at the time.
Yeah, it was to me. Yeah.
Well, because we'd also assumed there was some kind of technical boogeyman in the closet, because that seems to be the case with all the N64 ones. That's the only way to really explain what's going on with the N64 is just complete lack of presence.
Yeah, it did seem like it was more complex than the other systems that were on there, and that's part of why you got so few, I would assume. But
so let's go through ones that we're surprised aren't.
Yeah, that's an interesting question to tackle. One thing I've always been, it's not so much about surprise or not surprise, but one thing I always wish was on there was the Thunder Force games. You know, they're so celebrated on Genesis, Mega Drive. Yeah. You know, those were the real pinnacle of the shooters on that show. And there's a hell of a lot of Mega Drive shooters on the system. Some import ones, like, was it Glay Lancer and stuff like that? You know, you got some obscure deep cuts from that library, but they're not Thunder Force, which was the most famous. You know, I mean, I didn't have, you know, a Japanese Mega Drive growing up or anything, so it kind of, you know, that whole scene was something I kind of followed from afar, but that's what you heard about. These are the games that are just way too fast and crazy for like the Super Nintendo to do very well. And I think there was like a port of one of them called Thundered Spirits or something, and that, you know, it is slower because that's just not the Super NES's forte.
I kind of always wondered why we never got Contra Hardcore and Castlevania Bloodlines. Yeah. I mean, we got Castlevania games, we got Contra games, we got Genesis games, we just never got both at the same time. We even got like Rondo of Blood, you know? We got the
well,
import
that didn't come
only...
out. There was an import game, we got that, but we didn't get, you know, some like Bloodlines, which it did come out in America and Europe even.
Yeah, so I really wonder what kept these off the Wii VC. Were they made by a special team at Sega or something?
Yeah, it's weird. He is one of the things. Because, I mean, those games command enormous prices on eBay. And I know James is talking about sometimes there's a counterintuitive kind of thing.
Right, like these bad prices, games will sometimes
I'm pretty sure they would take a hit if they were more discoverable on by whatever means, you know, like on actual sort of hardware.
I would say that I know there's technical reasons in play, but I can't believe they haven't freaking dealt with it. The original Star Fox.
Right.
I would have thought that would be ripe for just a remake of some sort, like an eShop release where they clean up the graphics and just rather than an actual VC thing, because I assume, the technical. So, because that's why we only have the GBA version of Yoshi's Island, presumably, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because it uses that weird fake version of Mode 7.
Yeah, the sprite distortion effects are not as smooth, you know, but right. Obviously it's nice that there is a version of that game that's there that can be used if the FX stuff is just totally out of bounds. But yeah, I'm just surprised they haven't done some kind of retro, you know, remake. 3DS would have been ideal, but I guess something. They did the 64 remake. That was so kind of maybe put that out of bounds.
Oh, but you would think with all they're doing with that franchise, they would really try to put it out there, but they haven't.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple ones that, I can kind of figure out why they're not out there, like, you know, GoldenEye, not out there, obviously. Huge.
Sure, Rogue Squadron.
Yep. But one from Sega is Michael Jackson's Moonwalker. That was a huge game back in the day, not on there. I mean, obviously, we know why, but just one of those ones where that was massive back in the day. But that one doesn't seem too crazy. I mean, just go to Michael Jackson's estate and, I don't know, work some magic. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that these guys really get along and would probably stamp it approved right away.
Signed, sealed, delivered. Final email. I believe this would be Guillaume.
Hey, Einstein writes, hello, gentlemen, love the show, thanks for your hard work, awesome to have Greg back, etc., etc. A couple of episodes ago, a listener emailed asking for a recommendation.
All right, it wasn't a couple episodes ago, this is an old email. Yes.
In the distant past, I had to choke back the bile when you recommended the original 3DS. I was a day one owner, and I hold it in the same esteem as the DS Fat and the original GBA.
It's better than the original GBA, come on.
Yeah, you could see it. I mean, that's kind of an advantage. Shame on you all. Unless you were trolling the audience again.
Again?
In which case, very well. Surely it's never been done before or since.
Never.
In which case, very well done. I took the bait. Anyway, I wanted to ask your opinions and experience about the 2DS, as mine have just changed drastically. I just bought a 2DS for my daughter, as all the UK supermarkets have been selling them cheap to clear their stock. Originally, I thought that this 2DS was the dumbest idea I'd ever seen for a handheld because it looked like a slice of bread. It's not pocket-sized, and the name has parents asking, so does this thing play 3DS games? I've had this conversation with people I know. But last night, when she was in bed, I borrowed my daughter's 2DS just out of interest, and I was actually amazed. It's so comfortable to hold. The D-pad is my favourite on a handheld. The resolution looks great on the smaller screen, and best of all, the top screen doesn't wobble when I throw Hadoukens. It's now my go-to console for Street Fighter on the go, and played Star Fox was equally great. So yeah, I salute the 2DS. How about you guys? Do you know if it's been a success for Nintendo?
Well, it's still their most affordable DS, 3DS console in North America. I mean, if they want to push a game like Pokemon, like something like Yo-Kai Watch to the younger players, it's probably the best way to get them. Right?
Like it's usually like certainly with like Nintendo's official store over here, there'll always be like a 2DS bundle of a game like that. Some sort of a cheap entry level package, to get them in there. So I think it serves a purpose. I don't know, you know, if it's been a runaway success, but it's probably achieved much of what they set out, you know, for it to do.
Yeah, and when you see like the 2DS on sale for like $79, it's a very powerful argument for a lot of parents. So
yeah, you can buy Yo-Kai Watch and a 2DS for $100.
Right. So that's good. Yeah, like the hardware itself, like I've mentioned how I went to kind of a Smash tournament and someone was actually using the 2DS as their primary fighting controller. And they seem to be happy with it. So, you know, can't be that bad, I guess.
So I actually got to use one relatively recently. I know Johnny's spoken about using his niece's in the back. Because he bought her one, right? I think that was the story. I've used one relatively recently in a store for whatever reason. They had all of them set up. That's my first time actually holding the device. And he's not wrong. It actually feels really good. Like, it feels really nice in your hands. And if you're not actually going anywhere and you don't use the 3D, I mean...
why not?
Yeah, it feels good enough that, yeah, why not? I personally do use 3D, so I wouldn't partake, but...
It's because you're a real man, James.
I am
not
the person,
a child.
To be fair, I am the person who recommended the original 3DS. I stand by it.
I believe that was my recommendation as well.
We all kind of, well, apart from Guillaume, who's basically expressed a similar sentiment.
I'm still disgusted by the
rationale for that being an option was that, you know, it's something of an entry level kind of price at this point. But for a system that's small like that, because America doesn't have the smaller new 3DS,
right?
Mm-hmm. Which of course, Hey Einstein's clearly, you know, is a fellow countryman of mine,
right,
where we do
have
the smaller new. I personally have a smaller new 3DS. It's very nice. But that wasn't an option if we were sort of assuming.
I believe we actually said if you can get it where you are, get that one.
That's probably the nicest option. But it's I have not had the pleasure of actually seeing a 2DS in person. So stuff for like the build quality and all that, I was like absolutely.
It feels very rugged, which makes sense.
Yeah,
no, like it does, because you know it if it's meant to be that kind of thing. Although not being clamshell is still a problem.
Yeah, you can't intend to use it mobily.
Yeah, but you know, no hinge. Kids can't break the hinge. So
right.
Yeah. There's that.
I would say that, in my defense, briefly before we get back on topic, I have the original DS was my go-to unit until the XL came out.
Yeah, you have a high tolerance for crap.
I never.
The first 3DS model again was not good. I'm certainly not going to make an argument that it was a good piece of art, but at least, you know, again, in terms of just the screen being visible, it's not like there's been some great quantum leap since. Whereas obviously, you know, the DS Fat, while it was backlit, was nowhere near as visible as the
DS Fat. It looks like a prototype. It doesn't even look like a real console.
Hold on. Because I had my original GBA unit until I bought my DS, so I don't want to hear it.
Oh, man.
My launch day GBA.
You are just like, you have this bunker mentality, man. You're just like, I bought this system,
no,
I'm never going to replace it.
I don't want to be homeless when I retire. That's what it is.
you're going to make yourself what? Like, you're going to wall yourself in with DS Fats?
I'm going to wall myself in with fat stacks, you mean. John, I'm reinvesting the money I could have spent on buying iterative versions of the Game Boy Advance.
I know. It's,
I am a corporate tycoon.
Yep.
Corporate tycoon?
Yeah.
Executive series of James Jones.
Yeah.
I get it.
James is actually the final boss in Sega Gaga.
There you go. I would say, actually, I would have no reservations about recommending this for a kid. I think it's a neat piece of device. And if you don't mind the lack of 3D, go for it. Like it's totally worth it. It's dirt cheap, and it works well. So I'm not sure.
Also, could be good if you're looking for like a low cost additional unit for like multiplayer. You know, in a family with
multiple kids.
Or yeah, that kind of thing. Because that's the thing. Multiplayer on 3DS family of systems can be quite an expensive proposition. Even if we're not talking about download play, you've got to have the other system. You know, you've got to have the other units. But the 2DS could be viable in that capacity.
Yeah. Or if you're looking to buy from a region where the exchange rate makes the games a lot cheaper, hey, there you go. I think when it was announced, we were probably a little mean about this game or the system. I think that the most positive thing any of us had to say about it was, I don't know, maybe I'll get one to play Japan only games. So.
Oh, the irony that it's never come out in Japan.
Yeah, I know.
Because that's they don't need an entry-level one there.
No.
They're quite happy to pay the big money because it is the premier device over there.
A bizarre series of events has rendered that entire conversation complete lunacy. And then actually also managed to render the new 3DS conversation when that was announced also lunacy. So good job, Nintendo. You and your region-based platforms just giving us all kinds of grief.
We should say, you know, there is the new 3DS since we did that email, you know, is available in America as an Animal Crossing
bundle. I almost bought Happy Home Designer because of it.
So at least there is that option now. And of course, if you didn't want the faceplates of Animal Crossing themed, you could always just import faceplates from Europe or Japan, where we've got a very wide selection.
Just rub it in, Greg.
You should be glad. You should be glad that they exist, you know, that we have them so you could get them from us.
Yeah, I like paying VAT and then also having to deal with an exchange rate that's going to decimate my wallet. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, you know, those Majora's Mask faceplates don't get themselves, James. You got to pay up.
All right. So that's going to do it for email this week, and actually going to do it for the show. Once again, you can always send your emails. Or I don't think I actually pimped the email address at the start of the show. My mistake. You can send your emails to rfn at nintendoworldreport.com. That was the least thunderous thunder round we've ever done, which is why it will now be referred to, as I said earlier, as the gate of thunder round.
Winds of thunder.
Maybe the distant thunder round?
Because it was thunder round.
Long-winded thunder round. Yeah,
there you go. It. Yeah. But it's the only segment this week, so that's okay. Just as a reminder, I know I talked about it a lot at the start of the show, but donations are now open for the Nintendo World Report 6th Annual Telethon for Child's Play. You know, we are already well on our way to our $6,000 goal. We will be going live at 11:30 Eastern Time, Eastern Standard Time, December 5th. That is a Saturday. That is not the Saturday after this. That is the Saturday after this episode comes out. My mistake. We want you to be there. We will be having segments with live interaction with you, the listeners. We will be having contests with prizes. We will be having special guests. I can't talk about them yet, but there is one that I'm really excited about.
It's me. It's me.
John will be on a segment with me.
I totally will.
John will be on a segment with only me. God help me.
Yep.
And he'll be on a segment with me and Neil. God help Neil.
I'll be drunk at like 7 a.m. just talking gibberish.
Great.
Live.
Great. I have 3 hours with John, so if he's just pissed drunk, it'll be fantastic.
Let me tell you something, James. I always liked you, but I don't respect you. That doesn't make any sense. I don't care. Shut up and let me talk.
I'd actually donate more money for that. We will be announcing all sorts of fun things to go along with the telethon as we get closer. And actually, live on the event, we'll be doing all kinds of little promotional things during it. Really hope you'll be there. It's a really good time. And I think that's it. I don't know if I want to promote anything else because that really is taking up all of our promotional energy right now. So, let's go do it for this week. We're going to be taking next week off because of the telethon, obviously. And then we'll be back the next week in December. And on that, we are going to end the show with Steven, via the RFN email address, rfn@nintendoworldreport.com's recommended Big Blue theme from F-Zero. However, he did not recommend one, so Greg picked for him the unlockable arrangement found in F-Zero GX.
Yeah, you had to beat all the cups on Master to unlock this, or use a really long cheat code. So maybe people haven't heard it before.
I actually hadn't, so I'm pleased to hear it. And on that, bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.